Welcome. Remember when. Welcome to Remember When.
They're back.
Welcome to Remember When.
I remember I was at his house.
I can remember specifically. You recall when you got yours? Remember when they played that?
I remember that.
Basic. I remember yep. that.
Then I remember, still remember.
I remember us, and I remember
I remember that as...
Sparky called him Dusty Butt, because he was always hustling.
Had kind of a milky blonde mustache.
Yeah. Mean streets of Oxford.
I will never wear bell bottoms again.
Stick a screwdriver in there.
My sister got lucky, married a yuppie.
We gotta call AAA.
I burned my boyfriend's car.
Hair metal needed to die when it died.
Guns N' Roses versions of White Christmas.
That's not a thing.
Have you heard Guns N' Roses White Christmas?
No.
Robin Yachts.
I could go on and on and on and on about this.
Hello.
We're out at a Sunday night in Arlington.
I said get off the phone!
Hey, you know, guys, somewhere in some box in my house, I've got a personalized Kelly Tapuca autograph, man, on a glossy
picture. I remember that. How did you get that?
My mom met him at a bar or something. Dusty Butt.
All right, everyone, back to Remember When. Hey, we are live. We're trying something new today. We're trying our new Skype experiment today, Fish.
That's right. Helping the Pacific Northwest territory up here with Microsoft and using some Microsoft technology so I can see your handsome face.
As I was gonna say, we both have faces for radio. If we've got this experiment goes well, maybe we could start posting this on YouTube.
Yeah, you can see my Michigan coffee mug that I bought last year in the Upper Peninsula. And I got a Metalheads Have More Fun T-shirt on too, with the guy playing the double neck guitar.
You know, I was thinking. I just telling Leah this morning. I should maybe I could rely on you. You could start posting some lessons. I was actually thinking maybe I should start learning to play the guitar in this all this spare time.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's a good time for it for sure.
I remember when we were in high school. I was a high school or college. Maybe it was high senior year. When did you buy your guitar? I remember you playing it in your kitchen there in Oxford.
Yeah, that I would think that was freshman year of college. Maybe I was home or something. I think I have one in high school, but yeah, it was college when I really started getting into guitar. I had a roommate, Dave Bruckman. What's up, Dave? He was a drummer. And he had a friend from high school who lived in our dorm named Doug. I forget his last name, but in hindsight, the guy was a great guitar teacher and taught me some fun things, including Tangerine, Led Zeppelin 3. We were just on a big, long Led Zeppelin discussion on text, and Led Zeppelin 3 got some love. Wood, myself, and Defo, and Spiege, and Fader. So,
I feel like you're the second coming of Eddie Trunk.
Ah! Well, I aspire to be, but I got about 30 years less of radio experience, and I know however many rock stars he knows, I know that many fewer.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's been kind of fun to talk about that. Just at least, I don't know, you guys get so deep. I like Zeppelin, but I can't believe how deep you guys get in on this. I can't contribute in any way.
Well, I've always said they're my third favorite band after Queen and Guns N' Roses. I'd say over the last 5-10 years, Beatles.
Wow.
Beatles are close there. I don't know. I'd say GNR and Queen 1 and 2, Zeppelin and Beatles 3 and 4. So, hey, everybody, before we get into things, wanted to remind you all, if you have some bulk good needs and this is the time when we're all in our houses and we're trying to social distance and load up on the things that we need, check out Defoe's in Oxford. Our good buddy Paul Defoe will take care of you. So they're on 81 North Washington, right in downtown Oxford on the the north side. That would be, is that correct? There would
be the north side of, yeah, Burdick. Well, no, Burdick is the, is Burdick 24 or is Burdick? Yeah. Burdick's 24 at east. The north. What is Seymour Lake Road turned into?
Oh, you got me there. You got me there.
Okay. But the north side of downtown Oxford. Whatever. Yeah,
north side of downtown. Check them out on Facebook. Dafoe's Feed and Seed. They're, last I knew, they're just probably by the time this post, make sure maybe to ensure that they're open. But as of right now, they are. You can give them a call at 248-429-4500. And again, our good buddy Paul will take care of you.
Yeah, and you know, everything, you know, Paul, you know, Dafoe's, they're a proud sponsor of this show. So in light of the COVID-19, you know, virus and, you know, everyone kind of staying at home, we're actually giving Paul some free advertising. So we're not charging anything for this show. He's usually a proud sponsor. He's getting free ad space this week.
Yeah, and I know that he'll appreciate what that means—the opportunity cost that it's taking on us. But it's worthwhile for a good buddy like Paul.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's a ratio thing. The hundreds of thousands of listeners we've got, you know.
Yeah.
Think of the return on investment. You know, he's getting on these ads.
Yeah, well, and that's true too. If you go to Dafoe's and after we advertise on this podcast, there's a line up on, again, Burdick Street. You know, have patience, take your time, you know, find your parking spot. Don't run over anybody because it probably will be packed after this ad airs.
Well, especially with the horse liniment. You know, if it's a last bottle of horse liniment, you know, it's first come, first serve. We don't want any people rolling around the ground because they've got a sore back. Or sore muscles, just, you know, to be respectful of others.
Yeah, you know, and speaking of sore backs and muscles, I know, Wood, you're proud of me. I've been doing, I don't have any weight equipment at home, so we've been working from home. I'm like, what am I gonna do? So I've been doing yoga and cardio on YouTube, but I never had done yoga in my life. I gotta tell you, I like it. I've been wanting to do it for a few years. This was a good reason to do it, and I understand it now. I understand it now. 18 years old, 1990, I would not have understood anything about it. But now I get it. And also, I'm old and get creaky now. So stretching out every morning has been nice.
Is it DDP yoga?
No, although it's funny you say that. Diamond Dallas Page, DDPY, I think now it goes by. But yeah, I've wanted to check that out because I do think that's a combination of yoga and some other stuff. I'm telling you, man, those some of the more advanced yoga stuff, I can't do it. I don't have the balance or the flexibility to do it. So it's some of it gets intense. I think it's also good. The mental part is good for this time where we're all cooped up in our houses with our families and pets and everything. So,
wow. Yeah. Well, anyways, let's get into the show. Last couple shows, we've dissected 1989. I figure, what the heck? We'll keep going and go to the next year, 1990. Let's turn the calendar over to January of 1990. It's been pretty fun.
Yeah. Oh, it's been great. I've had a lot of fun with this. It's fun trying to classify things into a year and then look at all the things that happened at that same time. That's not usually the way I think, I guess. So it's sort of fun to force ourselves to think like this and talk about all the things that happened. And there's no doubting, I don't know, there's got to be some studies done on this, the impacts that make at certain ages. You know, I've heard the saying, like, when you're a teenager, a year seems like 10 years. And when you're old, yeah, a year seems like a month. And that's sort of the way it is. Those things just really stick out in your memory when they happened at that time.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, covering my mouth there.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, 1990.
Want to get into some music here?
Sure. You want to get into music? You want to get into TV shows?
Let's start with some music and then, and then we'll get it. Yeah. So, and, looking at this list, I don't know how long we're going to, being largely a rock fan, rock fans and largely what we talk about on this podcast, not sure how deep we'll get into this, 1990 Billboard chart. Cause it's not, there's not much rock on here, but, so number one song of 1990, the one I remember the video, Hold On by Wilson Phillips.
Was this when they were on the beach?
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that's right. Because they did have some other songs, not ever as big as this. The movie Bridesmaid, that was really big a few years ago. Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph and some others. This was like a lead up to the end of the movie. This song was featured with the band. But so made up of daughters from the Beach Boys and the Mamas and the Papas.
Yeah.
So Hold On for One More Day. It was, one of those pop hits. It was number one for 1990, and I liked it back in the day.
Oh yeah, that was they had a catchy little hook, didn't it?
Yes, it did. So someday
somebody's gonna make you wanna turn around and say goodbye. Till then, baby, are you going to let him hold you down and make you cry?
I don't think that was that second echo was part of the...
Things will go your way for one more day. Things will go your way.
Hold on for one more day. Yeah. That was a good one.
Remember when.
So number two, they came up on the 1989 chart as well, was Roxette with It Must Have Been Love, one of their slower songs. I said this a little bit for 1989. Yeah. I liked Roxette. I think they had some.
Where were they from?
That's a good question. I'm going to go with Scandinavia, but Swedish. Okay. Good. It was a man and a woman. I don't know if they were married or anything, but the woman just passed away, I believe. Just recently. So it must have been. I liked the look. It was a more harder song, and faster, harder song. But It Must Have Been Love is not bad. I got nothing else to say on that one. How about you?
Nope, not really. They were on.
What's that?
Nope. Go ahead.
Number three song I love. Oh, I love this song. Another video I remember. Song that I still pull out, belt at home sometimes. Nothing Compares to You, Sinead. Ireland's Sinead O'Connor. Oh, man, I love this song. A Prince song, right? So it was written by Prince. I don't think he ever. His version's good. It's kind of like the Manfred Mann's Blinded by the Light, where that's what... much, much more the popular version. And quite honestly, in both these cases, I'd say you go and listen to the cover. I like them better than the original.
So what's the original? Is the original Prince?
Yeah, Prince. Yeah, Prince wrote this song. And Sinead O'Connor adjusted a little bit of the lyrics. But I can eat my dinners in a fancy restaurant. Oh, so good.
It seems like this would be a song that someone nowadays, a rock band or someone, would cover. You put their own spin on it, you would think.
Yeah, well, maybe it's been done. I don't know. But remember the video. The video is just her face
boring.
And then she's crying.
Boring.
Oh, no, dude.
Why do I have to look at her face the whole video?
She's got like a shaved head and everything. Ah, loved it, man. The emotion.
Boring.
Say what you want. The video is boring, or the song altogether?
Well, the video distracted the song for me because the video is all her face. Is there anything but her face in the video?
Yeah, I don't remember.
All she does is look at the camera the whole time.
Yeah,
you don't remember the video?
Oh, I do. No, I remember it. I was just wondering if you hated the video, if you hated the song, or just the video.
Song's okay, but again, I don't dissect the lyrics.
I love this song. Such a good song. You know who does an amazing version of this song is it, getting partially probably to what you're saying, Chris Cornell. Oh gosh, check it out.
That would probably be really good.
Oh gosh, yeah,
that's
good.
That's what I'm saying. Someone would have done this, I would think, and could do a really good job with it.
Yeah, yeah. So Sinead O'Connor, and then Saturday Night Live. Maybe we should just do a show sometime on Saturday Night Live because it comes up a lot. Of course, then she did something controversial. Look it up, but on Saturday Night Live, and that was, I think, as far as mainstream, that was the end of her career. But she's still around. You still see her pop up using some type of controversy. Ireland, you've got U2, you've got Thin Lizzy, and you've got Sinead O'Connor. I think that's, as far as international? Are there other artists? Those are the big ones. Okay. Number four.
I'm not a big fan of Ireland music then.
Yeah, you're not. We were there a couple years ago, and they had a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I live in Dublin. I literally could, Irish Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I literally couldn't find it. It was like by the end, I think it was in between the bathrooms and the basement of some bar or something. I couldn't. But those were the picture. I don't know if Sinead O'Connor was on the picture, but definitely Thin Lizzy and U2, man. Those were the two featured in all the posters. So there were signs everywhere, and then when I tried to find it, I couldn't find it. So
yeah, we were talking about Thin Lizzy, how they're kind of. I don't think they were that big over here, but huge influence a lot of rock bands.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. And maybe bigger in Europe than here, but yeah, definitely. Like you said, huge influence on bands, including my beloved GNR. Number four song. I remember still felt it out at sometimes. Poison. It was is that what you're singing?
Yeah.
Belle Biv DeVoe.
If I were you, I'd take precaution.
I don't know the next words. I remember
jamming that song. Remember we talked about that where we went camping on our vacations episode? You and I went camping in northern Michigan with your mom. That's when I was learning about, you know, heating up a jug of water and taking a shower. I remember us jamming this song out a lot on that trip.
I still remember that. Did you? You must say I never had the tape. Did you have the tape? Is that how we listened to it?
It was on the radio all the time. So, I think I eventually got the CD. But I think this was pre-CD. I can't believe, imagine I have a CD in 1990. I don't know, but I remember this on the radio all the time, dude.
Okay, I remember we had the tape deck in the tent. Some of those life skills might be useful now. You know,
right?
Know where everything's headed. So maybe we'll be taking baths out and showers out in the side with our sun warmed water. So BBD,
yep.
BBD, ABC BBD. Motown, no, not Phil. Philtown Factory.
Another bad creation. It was Michael Bivins, and then he came out, and then he discovered Boyz II Men, right?
That's right. I think that's right. There was that lineage.
Michael Bivins.
Yeah. So Belle Biv DeVoe.
Another bad creation. Those were the kids.
That's right. That's right. And then the Crisscross was, you know, in my mind.
I don't think they were affiliated.
So, but it was like the kid, yeah. You know, the kid, whatever, hip hop, right. Soul music genre or whatever.
Yep.
Next, Vogue by Madonna.
I can't believe this is only number five.
Well, maybe in here we can look it up. Maybe it's one of those that split across multiple years, like we've talked about. Well, it says it was released in March, so you would think that it got, you know, all its starting in 1990 then. She was on the top of her game for a long time, and still. This was one of her big hits. I think this was one of those songs that maybe pulled her from being more of a pop artist to more of just like a mainstream respected artist. Yeah. I don't know. Greta Garbo, Anne Moreau, Dietrich and DiMaggio, Marlon Brando, Jimmy Dean on the cover of a magazine. Grace Kelly, Harlow Jean, picture of a queen. I remember listening to those lyrics and kind of studying some of that, some of those artists.
This was a staple at high school dances.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, because everybody could do you can't see me on the podcast, but all the dances from the video, you know, the hands on the shoulders and all that kind of stuff, you know.
It was a black and white video.
Yep. Vogue. She certainly, was creative and inventive and pushing boundaries, like you're saying, like the black and white video, just iconic, timeless kind of stuff. All right, so Madonna, Jody, my wife, who when we met, she was like kind of interested in concerts. At this point, she's like, you know,
right.
Maybe
right.
If like there's a lounge, like she could, like it's a suite, and like, you know, and like a car can pull her up to the suite and she walks, you know, she's just the hassle of shows she's just not into. Yeah. Madonna's one that she's always said, I'd like to see her. And then I've tried to work some magic to get her to go to Madonna together, but it just never happened. It's got to be an entertaining show. Last I looked, right. She was only doing shows. Of course, she's not doing shows now, I'm sure, but she had like a Vegas residency and then like an LA thing and then like a New York thing, like multiple dates. So it seemed like she's just kind of choosing her cities and
right.
and what she wants to do. So not conducive to living sure. in places we've lived. Anyway, number six, I have absolutely no recollection of Vision of Love by Mariah Carey. Do you know that? I know some Mariah Carey songs, but not this one.
Yeah, I'll have to play it here because we're going to know it for sure.
Yeah, probably.
It just, let's see, I'll pull it up right now. Of Love. It's taking a while here. I don't recognize the intro.
Mm-mm.
Oh, yeah. This is a really slow song.
I don't think it's not bringing it back for me. Okay.
Oh.
A little bit.
It's very slow. How is this a hit?
Yeah, that's enough.
Mariah Carey, I'm a little happy birthday to Mariah Carey. At least she turned 50 this week.
I did see, yes, that's right. I did see that. I always remember that someday, ooh, someday, good enough. That video when that came out, that was, I think that was her first hit.
Yep, yep. All right, what else we got here? Next.
All right, next we've got number seven, Another Day in Paradise by Phil Collins.
Oh, yeah, another kind of snoozer.
I like some Phil Collins, but not this one.
I know, this is a weird one, right?
Ugh. You know, funny, like this would have been, I know the year, 2003 or 4, somewhere in there. Because this was that time period, I worked with some people, and one of them had a burned copy of Phil Collins' Greatest Hits, like a like a CDR burned copy that we would pass around. And I don't know, just one of those points in time where I just got back into Phil Collins for a minute. And this might have been on there. If it was, it was one I skipped. But he's got some great stuff.
It's playing in the background.
Think Twice.
Yeah. It's not one of his best.
No, if you can't sleep, it's probably good to play. But, I mean, if it was number six, seven for the entire year, like, you know, I'm sure it was good for his bank account. So, you always need some songs live to slow down. I've never seen him in concert, and I think he might be doing, like, a quote-unquote farewell tour. Have you ever seen him live?
No, I'd like to see him, though.
I think I'm sure it would be. I'm sure it would be good. Number eight, Hold On by En Vogue. That I remember En Vogue. I remember.
No. So here's the funny thing with En Vogue is I remember En Vogue, I think, was just – this might have been their debut because I remember – wasn't En Vogue – because this was a big deal when MC Hammer was touring.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't En Vogue open for him?
That makes sense. I think, was that, yeah. I did see MC Hammer with Vanilla Ice. I don't know if that
really?
Was, it might have been the same tour. I don't know. If it really? Did, they didn't leave an impression. Yeah. I remember, No, You're Never Gonna Get It, Never Gonna Get It.
Never,
that's a song of theirs I remember. Never Gonna Get It, Never Gonna Get It, Never Gonna Get It, Gonna Get It. Sorry, what else?
The next one's that I remember this one. Who could forget this one?
Yeah.
Who could forget this one?
Cradle of Love by Billy Idol. Oh.
Rock the Cradle of Love. Awesome.
Yeah, this was. As I was reviewing the songs for this, I don't think one time we've mentioned Billy Idol on this podcast.
No.
which seems odd.
What are your thoughts on that?
That's what I was gonna start to ask about. He's one I would love to see a documentary on, because here's how I see it. When we were younger, he was still a pop star. Let's face it, he took total advantage of MTV, but he always seemed to have a little bit more punk cred, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And then White Wedding, Rebel Yell, what else did he have? And then with this album, I'm going to assume this was on the same album as Money Money. Is that right? I'm looking
at. I don't believe so. I think Money Money was in middle school.
Okay. You're okay. That's probably right then. Because I was thinking anyway. So then maybe over multiple albums then. But he got a little. Okay, it's from the album Charmed Life. Which is Prodigal Blues, L.A. Woman, Cradle of Love. This is the only song that I recognize. But so certainly later, late 80s into early 90s here, he was more of, I think, like a pop star. Like he kind of lost some of those punk edges. But I don't know, like he had to have had some good musicians, he and or others, good songwriters, kind of cross the boundaries of that punk, sound, what with pop, melodies.
The thing with, like you mentioned, White Wedding and so forth, like he was on Riff too. He crossed a lot of boundaries. Like he was on Riff, he was on your hard rock stations,
right?
But then Eyes Without a Face, like 80s pop,
true.
So he was, the thing I remember about Billy Idol was kind of cool, because like even like you think, well, this is like 25 years ago almost. Nah, it's probably 23 years ago, but he was kind of becoming a parody. Remember the movie The Wedding Singer?
Yo, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
And he's on the plane, and he's just this, he's a tough guy, right? Like, Billy Idol, he's a portrayal of this, like, punk tough guy. No one messes with Billy Idol. That was so funny on the plane with the Wedding Singer, where he beats he's in charge of taking out the fiancé.
Yeah, I remember that, vaguely. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, he kind of embraced, because I've seen him like on talk shows and things like that, and he kind of embraced, like you're saying, like this bad boy kind of a thing, but also, in on the joke, I guess.
And I believe last year, I think Jason went and saw him. I want to say he was on tour with Bryan Adams. Bryan Adams and Billy, that'd be a good show.
Yeah, that would be. Interesting. Trying to find where when he charted with Money Money. Anyway, I'll give up on that. We'll look at that after. So okay, yeah. Anything left to say about Cradle of Love or Billy Idol?
No.
Oh, again, here's one more thing. When I was thinking about him, one of the things with the Attitude Era WWE, I think of The Rock with the eyebrow, right? So put one eyebrow up and get the whole crowd getting. Billy Idol to me had that same thing with his lip, right? He would lift one side of his lip, and that was his thing, right? It was this huge thing. And remember with the Just a Gigolo video by David Lee Roth? He parodies a lot of artists, and Billy
Idol. Yeah, that's right. Billy is one of them. Yeah, he had his character. He had a character.
Yeah, he gets electrocuted or something like that. Number 10, actually this is a lot better than I thought, because this is another song I love, and I remember seeing this video, I remember seeing this movie. In the Earth Was Last Night. I don't know.
Devil on the run. Six guns have a mandolin man.
Yeah! And that guitar you're hearing in the background, that ain't Richie Sambora.
No. Which Guns N' Roses star is it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know who it is.
Oh, okay.
I was just saying that it's solo. This was a Jon Bon Jovi solo.
Oh, that's right. And of course off
Young Guns 2, I think.
Yeah. Which was that movie released? Well, we'll talk about that.
Is that
in 90?
I do remember Okay, this was Young Guns 2, I think, because I think Young Guns 1 I saw at the theater. But this is a great song. This is one of those I remember when in the Napster days when it was like, hey, what are some songs that I don't have on CD or whatever? Right. And I remember this was one that I was like, dude, I gotta grab that Jon Bon Jovi song. And I don't know. I don't know if he had opportunities to do more solo stuff. I don't know that he did. At least not at this level. But yeah, I remember thinking like, oh, you know, I wonder if he's going to go off on his own at this point.
We could go on a whole team. We got to have a show on this. I think we've talked about it. We may have talked about it on this show. You being you can really dive in and listen to instruments and tell the difference and all of this. This is a perfect example right here. When you said that Richie Sambora not playing guitar, right? So as just a music fan, not necessarily deep diving and being a smart fan, let's just call it that, kind of like wrestling terms, a smart fan, which I would consider you a smart fan when it comes to music. Are most people going to know that that's not the band Bon Jovi?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I didn't say
that's
that.
That's a whole other conversation It's the voice, right? We've talked about that, like with Sebastian Bach or Vince Neil, like, the band behind them, you're going to notice, I would think probably 75 to 90%. I'm just throwing a number out there on the wall. I'm throwing darts. But I got to believe most people just say, hey, that's Bon Jovi. They're not going to know that Sambora's not playing there.
Yeah, it's probably true. Yeah, I have no idea who the guitarist is, or it's not because of the sound, but I just remember, you know what I think I used to do a lot? I would watch MTV and really look forward to the MTV News doom segments, because that's probably where they're like, Jon Bon Jovi goes solo on Young Guns 2 soundtrack, singing the song, and of course it's a commercial for their own
stage. Right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah, before it was Martha Quinn and all that stuff, and then is he leaving the band? We don't know, you know. So I think it's just clickbait. You know, what today we call that clickbait. But I think it was the same kind of thing back then. So they would just pull out those things, and of course, you always look at the little trailer thing on the end of videos. Yep. It was his artist, song, album, label, and you know, it was Jon Bon Jovi, not Bon Jovi. So, So that rounded out the top 10 for 1990. I'm sure we both got up the top 100. I don't know if there's anything else you want to bring up. Pump Up the Jam by Tektronix. Big one.
That came out that year?
Yeah. It was number 13.
When did I've Got the Power come out?
That's a good question. it was 1990 was number 26. By Snap!
Yeah!
Exclamation point!
Interesting. Do you have a list of songs that go past the top 10 on Billboard? Just
curious. Oh yeah. I gotta put the link in our in the note I shared. Here's a good one. Number 27. Nelson, I can't live without your love and affection. I can't spend another night on my own. I'll give up my pride to save me from being alone. Oh, my God, I love that song. I can't.
Hey, going back up a little bit, we talked. Yeah. I got a list here too. We talked about this last episode for '89. Here's the cat. The Paul. Oh, Abdul. Opposites Attract is number 14.
And the Wild Pair, Paul Abdul, and the Wild Pair.
That must have been the cat, was the Wild Pair. Escapade, Janet Jackson, number 15.
Yeah.
Now, why was that so low?
Well, maybe it was split between the years.
Yeah, 89. It came out in 89.
So, the Wild Pair, what are their other mega hits? There's so many to choose from, but what was your favorite Wild Pair song besides Opposites Attract?
Let's just see here.
They were background vocals on some of her other stuff too. So
it was that one song.
Yeah, right? Bruce DeShaver and Marv Glenn. Yeah, that one song. It was that one song.
You know what? Here's what I'm gonna tell you. A song. Okay, we're gonna back up a little bit. This released in December of '89, and I still think it's a great song. Black Velvet.
Black Velvet. Who was the name
you
of
like that?
That
song?
Yeah, I do.
A lot of Miles released it, but I mean, it's been, if you hear, I mean, cover versions and house bands, a lot of Black Velvet playing. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
It's a great bluesy kind of song. But that was 18 in 1990.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I remember that video, too. Mississippi in the middle of a dry spell, baby. Yeah.
On Skinny Bop was number 32 for the year.
I love that video. I remember it had the little animated ladies dancing or whatever. I still remember that video. That's always like, if I'm really trying to like troll somebody about like that hates Poison and just like that, you know, that pop metal sound, like Unskinny Bop, like zero credibility. I mean, just the name of the song, it has zero authenticity, which I love. I love Poison. I don't love, but I really like them. But yeah, that's a song that any, you know, somebody who's Judas Priest only kind of person's going to just like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Barf all over.
Step by Step by New Kids on the Block. That was their debut album.
So I'm sure when we get into 91, we're going to see some more New Kids on the Block for sure. Dangerous.
Start the Fire. Yeah, Dangerous.
Go ahead.
But I was going to say, we said the last episode, 1989, We Didn't Start the Fire, was released in 89, but it was really kind of charted in 90. It was released at the end of 89, I want to say. No, it was actually a number one hit in 1989. But I guess it must have carried over into 90. We didn't start the fire.
Yeah, gotcha. And two things there. One is a shout out to our buddy Art Fader. We've been having deep music conversations. And anybody listening, check out Billy Joel live at Shea Stadium. It was right before Shea Stadium was raised. Man, Paul McCartney and who else is on there? John Mayer and Tony Bennett and also Garth Brooks, if you're into that. But Fader, turns out he's a huge Billy Joel expert. Huge. And wow, that live album is so good. I'm sure it's right. Where does it rank with your live albums, Wood? I know it's a long list for you of favorite live albums.
I'd have to listen to it to have it ranked.
I've been eating that album up all week. The other thing I wanted to say about this song, We Didn't Start the Fire, Ian Smith, you know, rest in peace, our high school history teacher, who I have to say, and tell me if you agree, and I think most people would say, one of the best teachers any of us had in high school.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And women's girls basketball coach as well, had some good
legendary teams.
Yeah. And I remember him. Did you have him in sophomore year? We took this song, We Didn't Start the Fire, and we dissected it and had to write the history. What a great idea. For interest in a kid that's like, you're going to be interested in music, you know, connect the song. Yeah. I thought it was just such a great idea. And he passed away a few years ago. Thanks for all the good memories, Mr. Smith.
He was a great teacher.
Yeah, great he teacher. Was. He,
just overall, everything.
He
did that with the song One from Metallica. We've talked about that.
Oh, wow. I didn't have him that year or whatever, because no.
Junior year. Because I had him 2 years, I think. But I think I had him 2 years. But I don't know. But I remember he played that music video. And then with Johnny's Got a Gun, the movie, he related it back to all of war and all that. So that was really cool.
Wow, Metallica's first video, right? That was Metallica's first video. So We Didn't Start the Fire was number 35. Go back up 34, really quick. Dangerous by Roxette, which I knew there were some other Roxette songs, so that's one of them.
What I wanted to touch on real quick here, and you might have a little more background, and you may have studied this, but it was a big hit by Rod Stewart, Downtown Train.
Yeah, it was just
the controversy with him and Seeger.
Oh, I don't know anything about this.
Oh, you don't know that?
No, I don't think so.
Because Seeger had I'm gonna have to go back because it's been so long since I read the story. Seeger, I believe, did this song, but Stewart ended up getting the big hit out of it.
Wow!
And it's actually a Tom Waits song, by the way. You know, it's Tom Waits.
Nope, originally I didn't know that. Song, nope,
and
nope,
Tom
nope.
Waits did Old 55.
Yeah, that's Eagles. Right. Yep.
And I remember Tom Waits actually compared to Eagles like watching paint dry. He didn't like them.
I think I've heard that story.
How boring they were. But there's something there, and I'm going to screw it up now, so maybe we could follow it up on a future episode or talk about it. But there's something with Rod Stewart and Bob Seger about how like Stewart stole it after Seger had kind of – it was something there. Like,
I'll just read right from the Wikipedia page here. Bob Seger recorded a cover in 1989, which was a down period for him. He released albums in 86 and then 91. So he might have been trying to, you know, keep some relevancy. This maybe was important for him at that time. Bob Seger recorded a cover in 1989, but opted not to release it because Stewart's version had been released earlier. On February 28th, 2011, Seger finally released his version of the song as a single, which appeared on the retrospective album Ultimate Hits. Huh. I know that album, but I don't remember Downtown Train. So that's about all it says about that. But interesting. Maybe a little inner rivalry far as that's right. Because I don't know what Stewart was doing, but 89 was probably not a peak period for him either. No, I like that song. I thought it was a cover, but Rod Stewart, we can talk about him some other time, but I like a lot of his stuff, even his later stuff. He had some cheese in there as well, but I mean, his old stuff I love, but even some of his newer stuff, Forever Young and Downtown Train's a good one. 38 there, Rhythm Nation, Janet Jackson, another, you know, as she was just on her reign.
You know, another one that came out in 1990, I specifically remember in the spring, this is so funny, man. So like in the spring of 90, I don't know what we would do, lifting after school, like in the gym there. And then we'd go run and jog in Oxford Lakes.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
So I remember this was the time where Please Hammer, Don't Hurt 'Em came out. And of course, You Can't Touch This came out in 1990. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I was okay.
And I might add the tape and remember like listening to it on my Walkman while I was jogging.
So hold on. Okay, I see it as number 55. See, if you would have asked me on the street, I'd have said that's top 10 for the year. Easily.
Yeah, right.
Easily. And it's
came out in the spring. 55. It came out in April.
Wow, so it didn't get caught in the, you know, multiple year charting scenario there. Huh. Just again, I think you get in your, back then, you know, you get in your bubble and you don't realize what the true hits were. There has to be some metric, though, of like annoyingly remembered and repeated songs, and this has to be high on the list, right? Because I mean, it just comes up and he's still probably on some commercial for Geico or something today. You had the two MC Hammer tapes, and we were big friends, big fans. Like I liked MC Hammer, still do. I mean, it's not something I listen to a lot, but I remember a lot of his stuff.
Here's another one. This is kind of fun that I'm glad we're doing the extended list. January 20th, 1990, the Humpty Dance.
I like my oatmeal lumpy. The Digital Underground. Oh, that's a great song, man. Say what you want. I love that song.
It's a great song.
Oh, so fun. Yeah, that video. Yeah.
A lot of these songs, I think they're in the ranking, came out in 89, extended into, let's see here. We talked about this. You weren't a big fan. I wasn't either, but who could forget this song at high school dances? January 5th of 1990, Forever by Kiss. That was a big ballad, man.
See, yeah, I barely remember it.
You remember the song?
Play it.
All right, we're going to play a little bit of Forever, and you'll remember this when I play this. We could edit.
So it's got to be Paul.
There we go. You got to get to the chorus here.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say there that. We go. Thanks for playing that because I do remember it, and I don't.
There think we go. Remember that?
Yeah, I don't think I knew it was Kiss. I certainly didn't know that it was that band in the late 70s that wore the crazy makeup.
Right. This is the non-makeup days. This is Hot in the Shade. This is the Sphinx with the shades on.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
But anyways, those that's a list off kind of the top 100. I want to get into albums a little bit.
But before we do, I just want to throw out there. Well, first of all, 96 was Without You by Motley Crue. We talked about that a little bit last podcast. But number 94, Just a Friend, Biz Markie.
Oh, that was a 94.
Wow. Oh, I love that song, man. Oh, it's so good. What's the lyrics? He goes over to the girl's dorm and she's kissing the guy.
Man, it's so good, man.
The Beethoven or Mozart wig. Oh, so good. So good.
Here's another one for, let's see here. Here's another one for Fader, which I love this song. Released in 1990. I Go to Extremes by Billy Joel. Love that song.
That had to be in the same. My mom had this tape, We Didn't Start the Fire was on. Let's see. Yeah, a fella come kissing my girl in the mouth. I was so incensed, my heart went down south. I think that's the lyric I was going for. Billy Joel, Stormfront. Yeah, that was the name of the album. It's got some like flag, like a boat or whatever. I remember my mom.
Here's another one. King of Wishful Thinking by Go West.
I remember that song just kind of blah.
It's funny thinking that this is kind of fun. We might have a 2-hour show on songs, but yeah, that was another one that came out in 90.
Yeah. Wow. Hey, number 61. We mentioned this in the last podcast. Janie's Got a Gun by Aerosmith. Released in September. So I have to think that it also spanned 90, which is why it didn't rank higher.
This came out November 30th of 89. So extended into 90. It was the number 30 song from 1990. It Takes Two to Make It Right. No, wait, I'm getting that confused. I'm thinking Rob Bass and DJ. I'm thinking that. I don't know Two to Make Right. I don't know what that song is.
No, I don't think we want to waste the podcast listeners' time by playing this. not Rob Bass, yes. Let the whole song play out.
No, I think we're good. Any others you want to cover from singles?
No, go ahead. If you want to get in some albums.
I want to get into hard rock albums.
Yeah, please.
That were released in 1990. I'm going in alphabetical order here. Released in September of 1990, The Razor's Edge, AC/DC.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was that Thunderstruck and Money Talk.
Those were both released in 90. Yep. Thunderstruck. Okay, and then, you know, it's funny. Thunderstruck is still one of those hot songs. Yep. I'll go to high school games today. Yep. I mean, that was on our high school warm-up. Intro tape, I remember, and like you'll go to like stadiums now, or not stadiums, but you'll go to high school games now, and Thunderstruck still being played.
Yep. Oh, my kids know that song.
Yep. So that was released in 1990. Let's keep going here. This is kind of interesting. Alice in Chains' Facelift was released in 1990, and that would have had Man on the Box in it.
Wow. So when was Man in the Box released then?
January of 91.
Okay.
Was the single was released. So it was a year later. Sense. But the that album
makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, the album came out in August of 90 is when the album was released. Yeah. I don't know what their first single was.
Yeah.
We Die Young was their debut single. I don't know that. I don't know if I know that off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's an interesting study because, January 91 makes sense then. But, I wouldn't have thought 90.
Well, I remember, we're jumping ahead, but I remember Man in the Box. That was on Headbangers Ball.
Yeah. Yeah, there was that transition
period. Pretty hard. That's hard. That's heavy stuff. I mean, you wouldn't think that's putting that in a grunge box.
Right. That's a good song. Another
band. Okay, here you go. 30th anniversary coming up, and I know we've been talking a lot about this album. We underappreciated it probably at the time. The Black Crowes, Shake Your Moneymaker.
Yeah. I've got tickets for September if live music is ever happens again in our lifetime. Oh gosh, that's the twice as hard as the opening riff.
Yeah. There.
Oh, it's so good. So good. I've been listening to that album. It's recently. It's a great album. Start to
Jealous
finish.
Again.
Yeah.
Jealous Again, Twice as Hard.
Yeah.
And she Talks to Angels. Those were their four singles off that.
Yeah, you know, I remember I don't know that I remember back then, but I guess maybe more I should say. In hindsight, if you think about it, that She Talks to Angels, they kind of use the same formula as a lot of the Warrants and Poisons and Motley Crue and whatever, but they just did it in a new way, a different way. So they still had the slow song that could be played on different formats. But they were just pretty much a straight up rock band that maybe at some point kind of got lumped into more of the grunge thing. I don't know. At least as far as they didn't get swept away with
I wonder if that's why we didn't appreciate them as much, because they weren't really. I think you said they were just kind of a rock band. I don't think they were put in anything. I think they were just a rock band.
Right.
You heard them on riff and stuff, but it wasn't like they weren't in like the pop stuff.
Right.
And they weren't in the like you said, the grunge. No. It was just they were just kind of presented, and maybe that's why they got lost,
because
they weren't in a popular sense really a mainstream. They were, but I mean, it was just more music. I don't know.
Yeah, I recently read the book by their drummer who's been kicked out of the band, and then also watched the Behind the Music. I'll just say they were doing plenty on their own to ostracize themselves from every genre that was out there.
Okay.
And one fun fact, if this is true, the drummer said in his book that they were in the trailer between Nirvana and Guns N' Roses at the 1991 MTV Music Awards, when all this stuff went down between Axl and Kurt Cobain. And so he had his first person point of view of everything, whether it was true or not sure, but it was an interesting, great book, by the way. Steve, I forget is the drummer's name, but
here we go. Going on next one. John Bon Jovi, you had mentioned that Blaze of Glory. So that was a studio album, but wow, did he do all the songs for that movie, for Young Guns 2?
Oh, maybe. I didn't realize that, but maybe that. I didn't realize that was I thought it was just one song on the soundtrack. But
wow, so you've got all songs written and composed by John Bon Jovi, except for noted. So he's got 11 songs on this. It says Blaze of Glory is John Bon Jovi's debut solo studio album, released August 7th of 1990. It includes songs from and inspired by the movie Young Guns 2.
Huh. See, I didn't realize that. Yeah, it looks like he only has one other solo album. But, you know, double platinum in the U.S., Blaze of Glory was. So, that just shows probably what a he had, all the connections at that point, high, riding high, but also just talented and trusted to take on something like that, like an entire movie soundtrack.
Yeah. Cinderella came out with Heartbreak Station. The video Heartbreak Station, I remember. And then Shelter Me is on that album.
That's a video of Little Richard, right? Shelter Me? I think so.
I don't know. I don't know if I've seen that video.
I think that's keep going.
And the More Things Changers on that album as well.
What a good album.
It's interesting. So I've seen him a couple times in the last few months. They played Shelter Me, but he kind of abandoned this album a little bit. He didn't play either time, The More Things Change or Heartbreak Station. I love Heartbreak Station.
Mm-hmm.
I also was wondering maybe if it's
too hard.
Maybe too high. I don't know. Yeah. I was wondering that.
Yeah.
moving on. We talked about this a couple episodes ago. Damn Yankees debut album came out in 1990.
Okay,
talked about that. We've dissected that. Okay, Extreme Porno Graffiti came out. Mm. So More Than Words.
Yeah.
That obviously the big hit. And when did that – let's see. More Than Words came out in 1991, which makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah. That had Get the Funk Out, right? And what else?
Did I ever tell you that? Did I ever tell you that story? Did I ever said that on a prior podcast? One of our classmates, Get the Funk Out, F-U-N-K is the name of that song. We were over at his house painting the garage. We had to paint the garage. So as we're no one's home at the house, we're painting the garage. It was a chore he had to do. We had to paint the garage. I did a horrible job, by the way. I think he had to repaint over my work because I still can't paint to this day. But anyways, we are, for whatever reason, have this album cranking in his truck. And we're listening to this album and blaring out the windows. We're just home. And then all of a sudden, like, because you've got the garage, you've got the house. It was a detached garage. So it wasn't attached to the house. So you had a detached garage. You got the house. You got the driveway and a long driveway out in the country. And all of a sudden, like, this song is blaring. Get the Funk Out. Just blaring, blaring. And we're listening to it and we're painting the house. And all of a sudden, the music shuts off. It's just dead silence. And we just like, we're like, what the heck happened? All of a sudden, like, his dad comes around the corner. He had come home. He had just gotten home. He's like, what are you guys listening to? You're not going to be listening to that kind of music around here. And we just started dying laughing because obviously you could. I think that's a little bit. You think it's intentional? Maybe they try to enunciate that word, maybe in a different word, four letter word. But it was hilarious, dude.
Like the Kiss song, I just want to forget you. That's forget you, by the way. But did you tell the dad when he came out there, say, hey, dude, if you don't like what you're hearing, get the funk out, man.
Exactly, dude. So yeah, that was another big album. You've got in that year of hard rock. I'm just going down the list here. Wow. Jane's Addiction, Ritual de Wabah, I can't pronounce it, but that's got caught stealing on it. That was a big hit.
I remember that video, and that was again ushering it. Now they were an LA band. I didn't realize that till the last few years somehow. It was something I was reading or watching or something, but ushered in that, you know, I think you're talking Jane's Addiction, Alice in Chains, at least for middle America, that was the start of the whole takeover of grunge.
Megadeth, Rust in Peace. This is probably their last album, really, before they jumped into the mainstream
scene. Yeah.
With Countdown to Extinction, but yeah. This had some hits on it. It's kind of a interesting. Pantera, Cowboys from Hell. Came out in 1990. Okay, and we talked about this. Go ahead.
Let's talk about Pantera for a second. Like, that's a band that really even listen to much in high school?
Senior year, when they came out with Vulgar Display of Power.
Yeah, that's a punch in the face, right? The punch in the face album cover.
Yes.
Yeah, they that's a band that, you know, and of course, you know, Dimebag. Walk. Oh gosh, that's such a good song. That's a song that walk on home, boy.
Thinking of and also four letter words, effing hostile. That was a song if you want to lift weights to.
Well, Pantera, yeah. If you're trying to lift, you know, if you're trying to max out any type of lifting, you know, Pantera is a band you want to be listening to, man. Or getting a fight, or with what else? Slam Dance. Yeah,
such a lot of tragedy too.
Yeah, right. Well, and of course with Dimebag, that happened in Columbus. We were living there.
Oh.
I had just been to a show at Al Rosa Villa as the venue, and I had just been there, and Jody came home and told me. She's like, hey, did you hear about Dimebag? So, yeah, that was And then Phil Anselmo, I saw him one time at a festival, a solo band, there's another band he had. But anyway, that's a band that over the years I've really grown to appreciate and would love to dive in some more at some point. Just so, sure. so different in what they did, and huge, huge.
Yeah.
Hot following and very loyal, you know, loyal fans.
Oh yeah. Poison, Flesh and Blood. We talked about Unskinny Bop. Something to Believe In. That's a great song.
That came out
September of 90. So Ride the Wind 91, but go ahead.
Yeah. I know you're going alphabetically here, so if you want to juxtapose Pantera and Poison, that's about as far. If you want to classify both them as rock, that's about as far as opposite ends of the spectrum as you can get.
Yeah, pretty much. I just talked about this one, Queensryche Empire. So Jeff Tate on his 30th year anniversary, that was kind of cool to hear that album in its entirety. I know, you know, again, Silent Lucidity, huge, huge hit. And that song didn't come out till 91. Empire, the song. I don't think you really remember that song. I always liked that song.
Yeah,
Empire.
I don't think so. I don't think so. And Silent Lucidity is the main one I remember.
But, you know, that album had 6 singles off that album. That's pretty substantial.
Wow.
Empire came out in September of 90. Silent Lucidity, February of 91. The Best I Can, June of 91. Jet City Woman, August of 91.
That's, oh yeah, I love that song.
Another Rainy Night.
Oh yeah,
that's November of 91.
Huh? These are all in Empire.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
And then Anybody Listening.
See, I don't know if I know that one. Jet City Woman, man. Oh, that's such a great song.
Yeah. So yeah, good album there. That came out in 90. Rat Detonator.
Hmm.
That Loving You. Is a dirty job. Loving You is a dirty job. Yeah, that was on that album. It's Scorpion's Crazy World. I don't recall that. What singles were off Crazy World? Oh no, I'm sorry. That's Wind of Change.
Yeah,
see, that's I forgot the name of the title of the album. Yeah. Tease Me, Please Me, November of 90.
Okay.
Don't Believe Here, December of 90. Wind of Change was the big hit, January of 91.
Okay.
And then Send Me an Angel, September of 91.
Oh, yeah, I've heard their version of that. The, Winds of Change, of course, we talked about it was December, but November of 89 is when the wall fell, and then that song was just huge, right? It's huge. I guess, over a year after it happened, but still always, at least to me, always associated with it.
Slaughter, Stick It to You.
Oh yeah. That had Up All Night, Sleep All Day, and what other song?
I still love Fly of the Angels.
I still love
that song.
Following that formula, man, the soft song and the hard song.
That's really the main ones there, right? And then they're supposed to tour with if it ever happens again. That was the other big tour that was going to happen. It was going to be Rat, Tom Kiefer. These guys, Slaughter and
Skid Row.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
With reunited with Sebastian Bach.
Right. Yeah.
We wish.
Warrant Cherry Pie came out in 90.
Yeah, that was the end of that. Again, you want to put an exclamation point on the end of it. I think that was it.
And I think I want to say Janie Lane really despise that song.
That's what he. Oh yeah, he used to always say that. I don't know. I wonder if that was, what do they call that, revisionist history a little bit. I don't know. Yeah, he said the record company said there's no single here, and I wrote it in a day and hated it and forced into it. But that wasn't the face I saw on there. That wasn't the look on their faces on that video, as I remember.
No,
they were acting pretty good, and I'm sure that album went platinum, if not more. So.
I Saw Red came out in 90.
I just listened to that song yesterday. I listened to Heaven because my kids knew Heaven, and I'm like, how do they know that? It's on a movie or something. And then so I listened to Heaven, and then I'm like, I got to listen to I Saw Red.
Uncle Tom's Cabin came out in April of 91. those are the main probably rock albums of 1990, I would say.
Yeah. Well, and we're going to, I'm sure once we get to 91, it's looking much different. And then if we get to 92, it's going to look completely different.
I don't think Poison's going to be in that.
No. I think of that Poison album, Adrenalize by Leopard is one of that Warrant album. Like those are some of the last bastions of the hair metal or whatever you want to call it. So you want to get into TV shows?
Sure.
All right. Let's get into it. I updated, by the way, the shared note here.
Hey, real quick on bands before we get into it. Stone Temple Pilots established themselves in 90 as a band, I think.
Is that right? Okay. And then when was, because what was the name of that, their album with Sex Type Thing, and what was the name of that album? Because, yeah, that was another one of those big
came on Core. 92.
Okay, interesting.
Purple was 94.
Okay, yeah, so Core was the one I was thinking of. Yeah, interesting. And, of course, we've talked ad nauseum, but all those things get lumped into grunge, and I'm not sure that other than the time they came out, they had a whole lot in common in some ways. But, all right, so going from music, from movies to music, to the top television shows of 1990, it'll be interesting to see what's different from 89 and what's the same. I think there's some of both here. Again, these are by ratings, which is how many millions of people were watching these shows on average. That's our layperson's definition of what rating means. So the number one show, you mentioned this, I think, in 1989. And I was just on a work call the other day where somebody mentioned this as the great coronavirus living in solitude TV show to watch, because it's just like it takes, you know, all the fears and pressures and, you know, away, and just makes you sit back and enjoy. Number one show with a rating of 21.3 NBC was Cheers.
Yep. Great show.
Yeah. One of those shows, I mean, a lot of people, you can name easily half a dozen characters, right?
Yes.
Norm and Cliff and Diane and Sam and what was
Rebecca.
Rebecca, yeah, and Frasier, and was Woody Harrelson?
He was called Woody. Yeah.
Okay, Coach. Yep. I mean, so yeah, I mean, we just named eight or I don't know. So, I don't know if you want to say anything about this. You want to talk about the Boston trip of 93, and you guys went, I didn't go with you, but
didn't go. I don't think we did.
Oh,
okay. I don't think we made it to Cheers.
Okay.
I had car problems, which that was in our cars episode.
Right.
So yeah, we made it there, but we basically just got to the Fenway Park, and that was about it. We didn't do much of anything because we had car issues in Boston. But no, Cheers, yeah, it's just a classic show. You know, it's still great today.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in a long time. I fell asleep on the couch the other night, woke up in the middle of the night and watched an episode of Seinfeld. Just so funny. But Cheers is another show, like, just to go back and just – you don't have to think. Yeah. You just can just sit back and enjoy. And great writing, great acting, great everything. Anything else to say on Cheers?
No, nothing else. We're good.
Okay, so number two. So I'm not sure what they were doing from 89 to 90. Some marketing, you know, some controversial episodes or something. But with a rating of 20.6, 60 Minutes jumped all the way up to number two.
From number seven.
Seven, is that okay? Yeah, so seven up to seven. Two.
Heck, what the heck was going on in 91, 92? I'm looking here. They were the number one show in 91.
Wow.
What were they doing?
Yeah, they were doing something right or wrong, or I don't know. I think that was just one of those shows. I think it was a
boring
1990. We were 15 years old. It was not our demographic or demo. Isn't that what you say? Our demo was not our demo. So number three with a rating of 18. So fell from tied for number one with a 23 down to number three with an 18. ABC's Roseanne.
Yep. Not much difference there.
Yeah, yeah. Number four from 89 to 90 was Different World. So it was number four in 89 and kept its place at number four.
I watched it a lot. Can't say I watched that show.
Yeah, because that was Lisa Bonet, right?
I think, you know, and the other thing is I'm going to find, I think, with this too, if it's interesting with this list, I think as kids, and maybe I'm wrong here, I think this, you just said it like with 60 Minutes, but if you think about it, I think this is kind of getting the age, you're getting into high school. You're not in the little kid age where maybe you're watching the Cosby Show.
Right.
Or I think we're getting to where you're getting a little more social. And I think there's more things going on, whether you're starting to play high school sports or you're starting to venture out more with friends. I don't know. But like, I look at this list and I know you're going to run down it. I can't tell you at this point, 1990, I was really watching these shows at all.
No, no.
I don't think I was watching Cheers. I don't Monday Night Football, maybe. But like, I look at this list, I don't remember ever like sitting down saying, this is the night I got to catch this show. Like when I was younger and now like we're adults, maybe there's some shows you want to catch. Back then, I just don't see us sitting down watching any of these shows.
No, by 1990, if I was the time I had to watch TV was all about wrestling.
Yeah,
and there was some bad wrestling at that time too.
Yes.
So we could probably
run through these pretty quick. I don't have a lot to say on any of these shows, but go ahead.
Number five, Cosby Show. So fell from number one. You know, maybe I don't know. Theo wasn't getting into enough trouble. Maybe he went away to college or something, and that was, you know, people wanted Theo, and so they fell a little bit. Still pretty dominant, but number six, the show.
Cosby Show wrapped up in '92. So I was gonna say this. Last year.
It was probably on its downward. I didn't realize that. Okay, number six, Murphy Brown. That was Monday nights, I believe.
Never watched it.
My mom did.
So did mine. I never watched it.
I think it just – I was just reading something where it got – they rebooted and then didn't – and it got canceled.
So right.
Anyway. Whatever rebooted means these days, because I think it was on network TV, not on like Netflix or something. Number seven, Tide. Empty Nest wasn't that – that was number nine, 89. I have no idea. Number 10 – or sorry, also tied for number seven is America's Funniest Home Videos. America, this is you.
Yeah.
Number nine, Monday Night Football. So it was number 10 the year before. Number nine, again, the overall viewership is down, but it's probably still in the top 10 or something like that today. And tied for number 10, I'll read both of these, of course, is the horribly insidious youth altering, terrible influence of Golden Girls. So Golden Girls,
it's falling down a little bit.
The moral decay that was Golden Girls. And this tie for number 10 was Designing Women. Not something I don't think either of us were into.
Golden Girls last year was 92 as well. So we're starting to fall off here. NBC's starting to lose a little momentum.
Yeah. I read a book, but I did on like NBC and their dominant years. A Little Field, I think, is one of those executives, Little Field. And it was interesting. And yeah, NBC, man, for a while. They picked back up with Friends, which I didn't watch any of that era. But it was like they were, like you said, so dominant for like better part of 20 years. Still, I mean, with Universal and things, I think they acquired some different things. So I think are still a strong company. You know, as network TV has evolved, I think some degree they've stayed relevant. So, anyway, there you have it. The top 10 shows of 1990.
A couple that debuted. I got a few here that actually debuted in 1990.
Yeah.
A couple that actually fall in our demographic. Beverly Hills 90210 debuted in 1990.
Wow. Okay. That's funny.
It went for 10 years, 1990 to 2000, that show went. And the other one, Saved by the Bell.
Okay.
Debuted in 1990. That was during the day on NBC.
Okay.
But it was a daytime show.
Was it? That's weird. That's a different formula, right? I think. I don't know.
Yeah. So the thing, actually, it was on Saturday mornings, I want to say.
Okay.
And then it went syndication. But here's the thing I always remember by Saved by the Bell and 90210. Thing to always remember is, okay, Saved by the Bell went from 1990 to 1993. Same thing with 90210. Those kids in that show were the same age as us. They all graduated 1993.
Okay.
Because I remember, do you remember so I remember everyone was graduating when we were graduating.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you remember – Saved by the Bell came out with a primetime show in the fall of 93. It was Saved by the Bell, the college years.
I was in college and not watching network television in my dorm room. Hey, guys, you want to come in the dorm and watch Saved by the Bell?
And I remember 90210, like we were graduating. And like that, all those like girls were graduating and the guys were graduating. And like, I'm trying to think who it was. Started dating Jake from up the road. And that was where Melrose Place was the spinoff.
See,
90210.
That was the thing I was going to ask. My memory of 90210, which is not 90210 per se, but was we got together at my house and watched.
Yes.
You were there. Okay.
Yes. I remember that.
Okay. I don't think I watched another episode ever. I probably saw some, but it wasn't ever an event to schedule around.
And the crazy thing with that, I remember specifically that night watching that. And I also remember us watching Metallica music videos.
So somebody had a VHS or something?
It might have been just on MTV, but it was, okay. I don't know if it was Forever I May Roam. But it was that we were ripping on the and I don't know, like that, yeah, like that seemed like it was the same night. I don't know, but I remember why we were watching. It was like, was it like they were graduating or something?
Melrose
or something.
I don't remember. This is how I remember it was that Melrose was debuting, so yeah. I don't know if we watched 90210, but because I remember like calling some girls from our grade and like, oh, are you watching? Allison was.
Okay. I remember that.
What did you think about Allison? What did you think about that? And like, we're talking about this. I don't remember the Metallica thing, but I'm guessing after we watched the 90210 or Melrose Place, we're like, oh man, we got it. You know, we got to get some rock and roll credibility back here. Let's watch some Metallica. So you feel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I remember about 90210. But again, one of those shows that, you know, Luke Perry, boy, he passed away a couple years ago, right? Mm-hmm. But you think of, you know, those are characters and actors that have stayed in the conscious, certainly people our age, I think. You know, Shannon Doherty and Luke Perry and Jason sure. Priestley. And then I think maybe some people younger than us, Melrose was pretty big for them. I don't know, but...
Well, then Tiffany Amber Thiessen, Kelly Kapowski from Saved by the Bell.
That's also.
She ended up actually being a cast member of 90210.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Something my kids were watching recently. She's like a mom. And my wife's like, do you know who that is? And I'm like, no. And she's like, it's Kelly from Saved by the Bell. I was like, oh, yeah. So, yeah, Mr. Bells, Belzer, Bells, right, Belzer.
Belding, Mr. Belding.
Belding. Screech, who has had some, I think he went to prison for a while or something. He's had some legal issues.
Here's some funny things. Just some quick fun facts from 1990. Cost a gallon of gas, $1.34. Heck, that's what I paid for it the other day.
Yeah, I was going to say, that seemed high for that time. Huh?
It seemed like I remember when we got our cars, I remember like, that we were getting gas for under a buck at certain points. Do you remember that?
I do. Yeah, I remember that coming back, at least in Columbus, Ohio, back again, like in the late 90s, like 99 cents. But, you know, it's funny you say that. In Oregon, it's one of the two states with New Jersey where they pump the gas for you. So
they have to.
Yeah, it's legally right. You can't get out of your car and do it yourself. So I after we lived here for a while, I talked to Jody and I said, do you have any idea how much gas costs anymore? Like, no, because you just roll down your window, give your credit card, and then when we're in like other states traveling, it's like, oh, this kind of sucks. We gotta get out and do our own gas. So
it's a mandate. Yeah, I know New Jersey. I remember that. We would go like to New York, like we drive through New Jersey, and it's really weird. It's like, do you have to tip this guy or what? And I don't think I don't think you tip, right? Do you tip or no?
No, you don't. Sometimes I know in Oregon they'll ask, which isn't. Probably use just Oregon, but they'll ask if you want your windows cleaned and then you can tip them. But if you're you don't want to get out in the elements and have to get your gas all over your hands, think about now how we're all conscious about washing hands and everything. Think about pumping your gas, man. That's hey, just asking for it. But move out to Oregon. The joke is like people in Oregon will drive up to Washington State, you know, across the border because Portland's real close to the border. You get up there and then Oregon people just sit in their cars and wait, you know, thinking that someone's going to come out and pump their gas.
One more thing with music before I go back to music. A song we were just talking about this guy the other day. It was released August 6, 1990. The single Friends in Low Places by Garth Brooks.
Okay, so I mentioned this in the I want to talk about this for a second. So I mentioned this in a text that I don't think anybody really responded. I distinctly remember, and sometimes I think my mind might be, you know, I get like wrapped around the axle on some of this, and it may not even be based in truth. So I recently looked this up, and so yeah, it came out in 90. I think maybe it was huge in 91. I can't remember, but country music was so far from my radar. You know, I didn't know George Jones from Travis Tritt from any of that till a little later. But I distinctly remember 93. It was the end of our – this is how I remember it. So end of our senior year, we had like a big outing at Collier Lanes. And, you know, they're playing music and whatever. And then
– I don't remember this. I must not have been there.
You might not have been there. But Friends in Low Places comes on. And maybe it was just the people around me, because as I remember, like lots of people from our high school were there. Like we took up like 10 lanes again. Any of this could be open for dispute, but Friends in Low Places comes on and people are just singing along, screaming, "I got friends in low places." And I was like, these are my friends. How do they know this song? Like, did they like country music? And like, I felt betrayed. You know, I was just like, I can't believe people I rubbed shoulders with in the hallways.
I think country, especially like where we grew up, a bigger following what you thought.
I think you're right. I think I was very tunnel visioned, as I was with the grunge and other things as well.
Yeah.
And I think in my home too. I don't think my mom was, till this day, probably listens to any country. So that was probably part of it too. But
same here.
I mean, we did get on this and text of you know, he's selling out or at least playing football stadiums and things like that. So no doubt Garth Brooks is one of the, I don't know, top 20, 30 artists of our, you know, lifetimes, but ever. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's not, I remember that being a shock to me at that time.
Hey, you wanted to make this a two-parter?
I think we have to.
All right, everyone, until next time, we'll see you at Remember When.
This podcast features the song Take the Lead by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.